Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello everybody, welcome back to another episode of A Fistful of Collars. I've been having trouble saying that the last couple of days, so I don't know what it is. I've had a cold, my sinuses are playing up, and everything comes out like a fistful of collars. A Fistful of Collars, the Flow Grappling podcast, the one that you like. Every single week here from the Flow Grappling HQ studio, myself, Howell Teague, Reid Connell, and Chase Smith at the table.
What's up, guys? And Chase Smith.
Dissect as some always. Of the... current affairs, the goings on, and to talk about some cool stuff that's been happening here at Flow Grappling as well, because it's something of the off season right now, right? Kind of like, should we say, it's like a post ADCC lull, almost. Like the ADCC fever has died down somewhat now, and there's that moment where, you okay there?
It's to come down. I can't lean forward, guys. My shoulder's messed up, so I think I'm just gonna be like an interviewer back here.
You're gonna make a lot of noise with your mic, so leave it there. Just lean forward when you can, because okay. Maybe we'll get you a special.
Sounds good.
Perfect.
Get you a special headset just for you. What's wrong, Chase? What happened?
Fuck wrestling.
Oh, dear.
That's what happened. just trying to get that ADCC vibe, keep it going, and I definitely got destroyed and hurt my shoulder.
We're all collectively trying to improve our wrestling.
You guys can speak for yourself.
ADCC, we're like, man, we need some better wrestling.
I'm not wrestling. That shit's hard work.
Yeah. So that's what you found out? It's tough?
Yes, I was reminded. I do this about twice a year where I'm like, all right, let's try wrestling again. And then I leave home crippled and say, okay, I'm going to leave that.
Back to jiu-jitsu we go. Yeah, yeah.
Indeed. So
it is hard work, right? Like Nicky Ryan was not kidding when he said, you know, wrestling sucks. It is really, really tough.
There's so much like getting down on the floor and then standing back up and then going down on the floor again and then standing back up and then like it's just a lot of up and down.
Funny
jiu-jitsu,
that
you just go on the, you just land on the ground
and just
and you just
come into my guard. Yeah. It's the best. Well, it's why jiu-jitsu is great for lazy people.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
but wrestling, so what, you guys been training wrestling with Mike Maller, right? Mike from the wrestling team here.
That's right, from Behind the Dirt fame, Flow Wrestling standout Mike Mal is our wrestling coach over at Paragon Jiu-Jitsu here in Austin. It's awesome, man, because he's not just a straight-up wrestling coach where we have to do everything, you know, in a traditional way. He's very tuned into jiu-jitsu and MMA, and so we kind of tailor the training to being good at those sports as well.
Yeah, I think that's the cool thing about Mike, right? He has a lot of experience working with people who... came to him looking to add wrestling to, you know, for other reasons. So, for example, MMA fighters and so on. So he doesn't just teach you kind of like standard wrestling stuff, you know, adapts it well for the submission wrestling game, right?
Man, he is good, Mike Mal. Get to wrestle with him, like you said, every week. And he is just like, he's so elusive on the feet. And he's got like perfect position. It's great when you go in with wrestlers who just like are never out of position. It makes me... want to do that more.
Better. It's really technical, you know. You look at two guys learning how to wrestle, and it looks just kind of like two wild animals going after it. But Mike doesn't work that hard. You know, he's just in position, as Reid says.
Works smart, not hard.
Makes you go out of position really well with very simple-looking movements that are just super technical. It's fun to watch, not so fun to do, I would say.
And, of course, Mike hails from none other than New Jersey.
The Dagestan
of the United States of America.
Represents it well, yes.
Wow. Such a rich grappling culture there in New Jersey. Those guys, they're they brought up rough, you know. They definitely, you know, fight their way up from the bottom in New Jersey, right?
It's the craziest thing. I feel like we talked about this on the podcast before, but you got like JT Torres is from Jersey. Nicky Rodriguez is from Jersey. The Ryan brothers are from Jersey. Mikey Musumeci is from Jersey. Gary Tonon is from New Jersey.
And a ton of other guys that, you know, we're just overlooking as well. You know, Tom DeBlass and his entire crew. There's huge associations of people. New Jersey's a big place as well, right? So, you know,
not as big as
going on.
It's smaller than California.
True. Those East Coasters, they like this crap.
Nicely done, Reed. Good fact there.
I just wanted to throw that in there. Quick, just make sure everybody's on the same page.
Yeah. But speaking of the Dagestan of jiu-jitsu, it's kind of interesting, right? Because we did this article last week where we looked at Manaus in Brazil, which is the city there in the middle of the Amazonian jungle, right on the banks of the Amazon River, in this incredible city that has produced more jiu-jitsu champions than anywhere else from Brazil. Just this incredible lineage of guys going all the way back to like Saulo Ribeiro, Ronaldo Jacare, right through to the current generation of guys like Matias Gabriel, current world champion, and then others coming through the ranks like Talisson Suarez, Diego Pato, Manuel Hibamar. It's it sounds pretty wild, right? I don't know about you guys. I've never been, because Brazil's huge. So when I lived in Brazil, I was like, you know, Rio de Janeiro, and I used to travel around there. And Manaus is a four-hour flight from Rio. That's kind of how far it is. It's a big old place. But it seems that there's something in the water there too, right?
Man, just Brazil in general, I feel like. But yeah, I think, right, the Ribeiro brothers are from there?
So I actually remember Saulo and Shanji's dad. I met him one time at ADCC in the hotel one time, and he was telling me that apparently Saulo was born somewhere else, but he was kind of raised in Manaus. I think Shanji was born in Manaus because they moved around a lot with his work, but they pretty much were kind of, you know, sort of raised there, and that's where they got their start with jiu-jitsu before they both went down to Rio de Janeiro and started training with Hoyler Gracie at the old Gracie Muay and stuff. So
yeah, we hear that there's just like a jiu-jitsu gym on every corner. Chase has talked about it for a while, going down there and doing something in Manaus. I've always wanted to go. Going to Minas Gerais there just a few months ago.
Which currently is like probably one of the best producers for talent as well in Brazil, right? Look at the guys who come out of there.
Yeah, I mean, that's where, you know, Felipe and the big Gracie Baja contingent over there. You have Homolo is from there as well, and Gabriel Arges and Sergio Tulio and Felipe Pena. So, yeah, a lot of big Gracie Baja names have come out of Belo Horizonte right there. So, you know, I felt like going there, going to restaurants and stuff like that. I met a couple other jiu-jitsu black belts. I went into just like a random restaurant. We were just trying to find food, you know, and preferably somebody who could speak a little bit of English, because my Portuguese is not very good at all. And this guy immediately came running up to me because I had like a jiu-jitsu t-shirt on, and he's like, "Hey, you do jiu-jitsu, you know?" He like immediately, and he was just this random restaurant owner, and he knew Cesar Casamajo.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And Cesar's,
cool.
Cesar's
yeah.
from Belo Horizonte as well.
Cesar lives in Hawaii now. Caveira, right?
That's right. That's right.
Right.
Yep. Yep. So that region is cool, but you know, from what I hear, Manaus is even more densely populated with jiu-jitsu. He's even more kind of has a more storied history in the jiu-jitsu.
Well, they say there's nothing else to do there. That's what Shanji and Saulo always have told people is that there's not, soccer's not as big, like football or soccer, whatever you want to call it. It's not a big deal out there, and they just fight. It's just a combat sports kind of place.
I heard as well that in Manaus they have like a kind of their own tournaments, because Manaus is not a rich city either. So the guys from Manaus, very few of them managed to make it out. And that includes even going to other places inside Brazil, because I remember once I was looking at it out of curiosity. I think there was a tournament in Manaus that I was considering going to, and I checked, and the flights were actually really, really expensive. And I ended up not going, but I've heard that it's tough for the guys to get out of Manaus to go to other places to compete, because most of the big tournaments are held in like Rio, Sao Paulo, places like that, right? And apparently when they have like the local tournaments in Manaus, they get like 3,000 guys show up to compete. It's huge. Like the sport is really, really big there. But yeah, you'd go there and you probably wouldn't recognize 99% of the guys who are competing, but they're all murderers. Mm. They're all absolute killers.
Yeah, we were telling Adora, tell us about our idea to go out there, and he didn't think it was a very good idea.
He laughed at us. He's like, why would you do that to yourself?
He didn't love the idea.
I heard that Manaus is not a bad place. You know, there are good and bad parts everywhere in Brazil, and you know, you can from one block to the next, but Manaus is definitely on the rougher end of the scale in terms of Brazil. It's less it's a big city of like 2 or 3 million people, but it's definitely a little bit less developed and less cosmopolitan. So if you went as a gringo, especially, you know, you'd stand out. And our own Ricardo Amendola, actually, I believe, holds the distinction for being the first ever gringo to compete in a jiu-jitsu tournament in Manaus.
Oh, that's so badass.
And
I believe it
win.
Exactly. Yeah.
But I think he was when he was like a blue purple belt, something like that. So it's pretty cool.
That's dope. So is he basically from Manaus now?
Pretty much. Manaus, well, he has family there now as well. So that's really cool. He's been back and forth to train there a lot. But you look at the guys who came out of Manaus, and like I say, you know, Ronaldo Jacare, Ari Farias is from Manaus. Talisson Suarez. He's, you know, poised to do big things at black belt.
Got Hibamar in there.
Yeah, Hibamar is from Manaus, and
Diego Pato.
Yeah, this I'm blanking real quick because there was one other big name I was going to mention. Of course, we mentioned Matheus Gabriel, who just won the black belt world title this year at Worlds 2019 IBJJF World Champion.
Is that Miguel Galvão out of
Manaus? That's it. That's what I was going to say. So thank you, Chase, for queuing me up. So Michael Galvão, let's call him Michael. Michael Galvão is the 16-year-old juvenile blue belt, or maybe 15-year-old, 15, 16-year-old blue belt, whose dad, actually, Melky Galvão, is running or has run a very, very strong team there in Manaus for a long time. And, you know, jiu-jitsu's in the family. I believe that he has a daughter that trains as well, and his daughter spent a lot of time training and living with Cabrinha in Los Angeles. She's a little bit older. But Michael coming through the ranks, and he held the distinction of, much like some other standout juveniles we've seen, like guys like Roberto Jimenez and people like that, that he became notorious because he actually beat black belts while he was still a color belt teenager. I think he was maybe still a green belt or had just got his blue belt, was 15, and he actually tapped out a black belt. And they put out a call. It was Copa Podio in Brazil. They tried getting a black belt to face off with Galvão because Galvão has just destroyed pretty much every kid who's been put in front of him, because it's just, he's that far ahead of everybody else, you know? So they were like, okay, let's get him some tough matches. And nobody wanted to fight him because it's like, well, it's a lose-lose situation. If I go out there as a black belt and I beat this 15-year-old blue belt, of course I'm supposed to do that. But if I lose, I'm going to look really, really bad. So one black belt, credit to him, I don't know who he is or his name, but I guess a local guy from Manaus stepped up and he took the match with Michael and he got armbarred. But I guess pride kicked in and he didn't want to tap out to a blue belt, so he got his arm broke. Michael Galvão broke his arm. Like, ugh, disgusting.
Ultimately a worse outcome than just tapping, I would say.
You know the crazy, crazy thing that has recently been announced is that, so we've mentioned about how nobody wants to fight this kid. So Copa Podio put out a call and they found somebody to take him on. A black belt from Dagestan.
Yes.
The actual Dagestan. Not the American Dagestan, not the Brazilian Dagestan, the Dagestan of Dagestan. And this guy's name is...
I bet there is a Dagestan of Dagestan.
It probably is.
Like a really, like don't one go neighborhood. There.
his name, I got to get this right now, is Magomed. Of course it is. It's Magomed. It's a tough one to pronounce. Let me make sure I'm getting it right.
Is that a photo of him with a lion in his lap?
Yes, like it is. It's okay. A photo of him looks with a like lion it. Cub in his lap.
I'm a big fan of this guy already.
Yeah, I know, right?
Classic lion cub.
Abdul Kadyrov Magomed. Or Magomed Abdul
Kadyrov. These are just things Kadyrov. You gotta do when you go to Dagestan.
I guess so, yeah. Let me see if I can... can you see that, guys? Look at that right there. That is...
Nice, yeah.
Yeah, cute. For now. Yeah. That's just an average house cat in Dagestan. People have, like, lion cubs and stuff. So Magomed, Abdul Kadyrov Magomed is... or however you say his name, is, he's actually legit as well. He's an ADCC veteran. I remember he competed 2015 ADCC in Brazil. Mm. Beat Ben Henderson.
Tough.
And then lost to Eddie Cummings, I think. But, yeah, no, super tough. Incredibly tough. But, yeah, nobody else wanted to take on that 15-year-old, so they had to fly a guy in from Russia to do
it. Man, these, you know, we talk about it a lot, but yeah, I wouldn't want to fight any of these 15-year-olds coming up either. You know, there's so many these days that have just been doing it for so long that just look like absolute killers out there. And yeah, Michael's definitely one of those guys who's just buzzsawing through whatever belt you got on your waist.
These kids are scary nowadays, right? Any kids in particular you guys kind of been watching lately?
Okay, that puts you on a list right there, Hal, that phrase. But for me, we've been big fans of Cole Abate for a long time. You know, he's from Texas, and I moved out to go train at AOJ. And
good move,
those
right?
Guys, yeah, I mean, they have one of the best youth squads anywhere in the world, you could say, and they're really, really devoted almost to building up, you know, young athletes, and I think it's a smart move. But he's just a killer. He finishes everyone. That's the one thing I love about a lot of these young athletes that we're talking about, is maybe it's because there is maybe a disparity in competition, but they all finish people relentlessly. Mm. It's not like they're playing, you know, strategy and tactics out there, that they're just killing everyone. So that makes it fun to watch.
Got a really good profile piece on him and the other kind of the new face of AOJ who came in around the same time, and that's Gustavo Ogawa. Mm. And these are the new pet projects from Gui Mendez, the two green belts that he's just got his hands on them now. You know, they're kind of in the gym with him full time, and you know, he's ready to mold them into fearsome competitors and unleash them on the jiu-jitsu world.
Look how Tynan and Mateus and Jonathan have turned out.
There you go, exactly. Well. Yeah, the results speak for themselves, right?
But you're gonna say, we're talking about blue belts fighting black belts. We got this crazy one coming up here pretty soon. All right, I think this is official.
Official. Okay. We can talk about it. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
You got Ty Rotolo versus Wagner Hosha, talking about blue belts fighting black belts. That one kind of blows my mind. Big ups to Wagner for taking that one, because like Seth said, I'm sure he had a hard time finding somebody to step on the mats with Ty, especially after his performance at ADCC.
Can you believe that? That is, sorry, I cut you off, but can you believe that there's like an over 20-year age gap in that match?
Yeah, it's phenomenal. I feel like people are forgetting ADCC. It was just a month ago, and it's like, right. Why has this match been made? Why is this happening? Ty almost broke Paulo Miel's leg. Like, yep. He's game. He's really, really damn good.
He had Kennedy and Paulo in the deep DOS chokes as well, right?
Exactly. I this is no
beat Bruno Frazzato. He beat the Pablo Mantovani.
Bronze medalist, ADCC bronze medalist in Bruno.
And he's 16.
16 years old.
Ty is 16 years of age. I'm not sure. Wagner's what, 37? 36, 37? So there's like 20 years age gap right there. Wagner taking silver at ADCC this year. But that is insane that nobody wants to face Ty now, right? After what they saw at ADCC. And yet, this kid is still a blue belt. And as per the regulations, he can't even fight adults yet in open tournaments. He has to go up against other 16-year-olds. Kind of unfair, right?
I feel like Seth backed out of this match. I feel like that he was setting this match up for him and versus Wagner, and then that the final hour he slotted Ty in to take his place.
Man, I mean, not like cool, Seth himself said that he can't find anybody to fight this kid. Wagner's the only one who stepped up. And
yeah, that's
like,
what I said. Big ups to Wagner, because definitely, you know, of course he doesn't have to take the match or whatever, and I'm sure. There's a lot to lose, and I think there's a lot to gain too. But so definitely big ups to him for doing that. He didn't have to. He's a silver medalist.
When's that match happening, Hal?
November 9th in Fight to Win 131 in San Francisco.
San Francisco too. San Francisco. I've been to that show a couple times. That's a rocking show out in San Francisco. It's usually a lot of fun. We went out to that one, of course, and back in the day. Always San Francisco crowd shows up.
Interesting as well, because Ty is a big kid and he's growing really, really fast. He's like right in the middle of a growth spurt. And he made 66 just, you know, because he was obviously an ADC reservist and came in at the last minute as an alternate. And he struggled to make 66 compete. But this match is at 77 kilos, because apparently Ty, there's no way that he's going to be able to make 66 again. He's like, well, I mean, you stood next to him, right? You saw how big
he's getting. Big, yeah, yeah. Right. Man, who knows? 2 years, he could be 88. Like,
legit.
Who
yeah,
knows?
Absolutely.
You know, like, he's a big dude.
Yeah. So, Wagner as well, of course, you know, he's very famous, right, for those, I don't want to call them dirty tricks. People do.
Brutal.
Yes, there you go. Violent jiu-jitsu. You coined it very well one time, right? It's a a violent jujitsu evangelist, right?
Mm-hmm. But I like that.
Yeah, but Wagner is not a dirty guy. He doesn't do anything outside of the rules. He just tests the limits as far as they can go, right? So he won't do anything that is illegal. That he'll just, you know, he'll make it uncomfortable, shall we say. And, you know, the big question mark is, of course, is he going to hold anything back against somebody like Ty? What do you think?
I don't think so.
He's kind of embraced the bad boy role a little bit. He loves the haters, I think, out there that reject his use of the Python and call him a meanie. I think he likes that, so maybe he will turn on the heat.
It's a part of his game, right? I think just in general, it's cool watching him move through ADCC because each match, you know, he does. He tries to get you off your game, and he's really good at it, man. You know, he's really good at you know, just kind of saying the right thing when he needs to, or kind of pushing you out of bounds, or you know, talking to the coaches even sometimes between there. He's just so good at getting guys off their game, you know, and I think that's a big part.
But what happens when, or if, let's say, Wagner gets the back, puts on the Python, that body triangle with the hand over the mouth, that smother choke that he does, and let's remember the Ty 16 years old.
Hey, Ty signed up for it. He knows what he's doing.
Well, but okay, but maybe, you know, assumed responsibility on his part, but what about everybody else? Is the jiu-jitsu community going to collectively lose their shit when that happens?
Like, I think they'll freak out.
Is Wagner going to get an even worse reputation than he already has? Like, what are the ramifications here?
They'll for sure freak out. But I ask those people this. Like, that actually doesn't hurt Ty at all. The Python is merely uncomfortable. And, yeah, it sucks. I've had people do it to me, and it does make you angry in that moment. Like, I hate you. Like, but is it really worse than if Wagner goes for, say, a heel hook, which actually could damage someone's knee? Like, Python is strictly attacking your ego. It's not going to hurt you. So I think it's all right.
No, it's a good point. It is a good point. It is not a damaging move, right? It doesn't, not going to end somebody's career. Speaking of the heel hooks, that it was one area that if anything, you know, that there was a hole in Ty's game earlier this year were the leg locks, right? Ooh, because he lost at both the East Coast ADCC trials and the West Coast ADCC trials via heel hook. And one of them was pretty bad, right? I remember he got carried off the mat.
East Coast one was pretty bad, yeah. Mm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he's young enough, able to bounce back.
Do you think that he's addressed that in his training? Because I mean, we didn't really see any issues there at ADCC, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I think he didn't really go up against a pure leg locker or somebody with high level leg locks. I mean, Paolo's got good leg locks for sure. But I don't know. Maybe that remains to be seen if he's cleaned that up enough or not. But obviously he looked great at ADCC. He had some offensive leg locks of his own. That picture with Paolo is iconic. One is going to go down in history. That's a good question. I don't know. I'm not sure we got the answer to that at ADCC.
But. I mean, Wagner has got leg locks. We've seen him tap people out with leg locks in the past. He's not a leg locker in the traditional sense. He's not one of those, you know, hyper-focused guys. But he certainly has leg attacks, and he's used them. So, but hey, anything can happen, right? Who knows?
His match with Kennedy was super sick, too. And I think he was probably seconds away from winning that match if he didn't get caught in the choke there. But that was a really, really great match too, even in defeat.
I love the way the Ty dives on those DAS chokes.
Yeah.
I really do. Yeah, he's got fantastic, he's got pretty long arms for his build, right? So he manages to wrap him up. But moving on from the teenagers and the super fights, and let's talk a little bit about a huge standout moment from last weekend, and that is in Brazil, in Sao Paulo, the BJJ Stars tournament. It was the 8-man invitational tournament. Nicolas Merigali coming out on top, submitting Gustavo Batista in the final with a Kimura, beating along the way Lucas Hulk Barbosa and Victor Hugo to win that, putting in our pound-for-pound rankings Merigali as the number one black belt in the world. Agree or disagree?
First time Buchecha has been dethroned since we have the rankings in place, I believe.
But you didn't answer my question.
I agree.
You agree?
I'm
Why?
With it.
Why? What's the what's the logic behind that? Because, like you say, Buchecha has always been number one pound for pound in our rankings. So, what was it that put Merigali above him based on that weekend?
Well, I think there's always been an issue of frequency. The rankings are tough because, you know, prestige goes a long way. You win worlds, you should be at the top. But Buchecha kind of competes once a year in the gi, really. And, you know, he did do a super fight earlier in the year, but it's very, very infrequent. Marigali won Worlds impressively with a submission. And you could argue maybe that his performance overall was a little bit more impressive than Buchecha's run at Worlds. Obviously debatable. But then he comes out again and just a few months later takes on top competition, wins with submissions, wins convincingly. Why not? Let's shake it up a little bit. Like, to me, you can't just rest on your laurels and be number one, number one, number one by winning one tournament a year. Like, I would like to reward people that are extremely active and taking on tough challenges, not just winning kind of, you know, gimme super fights or something like that. This was a really hard tournament at BJJ Stars, and Marigali shined. So,
and taking out Gustavo Bautista, who's the current middle heavyweight world champion, taking out Lucas Hulk Barboza, who's the previous year's world champion. Those are two extremely highly ranked guys, very, very tough, obviously. And it also, it goes back to the question, right, Reed, about how winning the absolute division doesn't automatically make you pound for pound. It certainly puts you up there in the estimations of becoming pound for pound number one. But if the absolute was the only measure of success in that, then that would completely shut out every single lightweight guy in the game, right?
For sure. Definitely. You know, I think the absolute division definitely is a big indicator, of course, you know, but it's where we can see a lot of these guys in different weight classes go up head to head. But definitely, Marigali, you know, we're big fans of him here. We've been following him for a while, and it's impossible not to be impressed with what he does, and especially over the weekend. We know very well how tough Gustavo Bautista is. You know, like, Gustavo Bautista has had also an incredible year. Like, I can't remember really too many guys beating him this year.
I can't remember him losing. Getting submitted.
Yeah, and getting submitted. So, like, Gustavo is definitely, you know, he's had an incredible year. So for Marigali to go out there and do what he did against a guy of that caliber and a guy of Hulk's caliber as well, we all know how tough Hulk is. I think he's maybe 4 or 5 or something in the pound-for-pound list. But taking out both those guys in there, you know, you also had Leandro Lowe in that tournament, so it was a very, very tough tournament. You know, I have definitely no problem with him being the number one guy. I think, you know, it puts a target on his back, so that's cool.
As if he didn't have one big enough as it is, right? Because yeah. There's definitely no love lost for Marigali. He's definitely, he's upset a lot of people along the way. I think it's a combination of things. I think it's the fact that Marigali wins, and that he does so and he's quite vocal, you know, afterwards. A lot of people don't like that. They think it's disrespectful. But it's also a lot of it as well is his association with his coach, you know, Mario Hayes. A lot of people hate Mario Hayes, and they just despise everything about him on principle, because he's also a very vocal kind of guy. And, you know, they basically ruffle a lot of feathers, let's put it that way. So,
but I do think that you know, it's tough to for Marigali, I think, it'll be tough for Marigali to really adopt the number one best gi player, you know, in jiu-jitsu without having beaten Buchecha. Because Buchecha,
yes,
is the guy, you know, like, and yeah, he has been the top of our rankings, you know, for a while, for good reason.
Yeah.
He is the absolute champion. He's the ultra heavyweight champion. And it, I guess, what they fought in 2018? They fought in 2018?
Marigali's never fought Buchecha.
No, they fought in the absolute, and it was a great match.
I'm sorry, they did. Yeah, 2018 Worlds. Yeah, no, you're right.
Buchecha did kind of
semifinal.
Route
him, yeah,
in
that's
that
right.
Match. And it was 2018.
But you know, hey, I'm going to play devil's advocate here, because you remember that match, and you remember there was that moment, the restart with the half guard position, and there was like a huge kind of question mark about the grips that they used to restart, and Buchecha restarted with these specific set of grips that enabled him to immediately sweep and kind of. It was a big turning point for the match, but yeah, that was a great match. So
I'd love
that.
To run it back.
Yeah, I mean, that's
exactly, which is why I want to see that.
There's only one way to definitively really find out, you know, who's better, and I think that's, you know, put those two guys on the mats together and kombach, you know, let's see how it goes.
Let's do it.
So hopefully, you know, 2020 is just around the corner. You know, gi season. We're getting ready for the gi season. You know, I feel like. Yeah, we had a good run in the no-gi, but I feel like always after a good no-gi season, people are that much more excited about a gi season. So hopefully when that gi season comes around, all these guys throw down. I'm excited for it.
Yeah, and like one of our commentators said here in the live chat, is that it's not just how It's not just that Mirigali wins, it's how he wins as well, right? And that is key. Like, I just checked the stats real quick, and that's only the second time in his black belt career that Gustavo Bautista has ever been submitted. That's a big deal. That guy never... You really see him in a bad position, let alone see him get tapped out. So it's incredible.
Yeah, we talked a little bit last week with Gordon, you know, and he was complimentary of some of the things that...
Of a little bromance going on there on Instagram lately, right?
What is going on there? They do seem like they're going back and forth a little bit.
Gordon being extremely complimentary of Marigali's jiu-jitsu, and that's rare because, you know, Gordon's usually the first one to point out about how much other people suck. He's like, oh yeah, that guy doesn't know a single jiu-jitsu move and blah, 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 blah. So,
yeah, they have a little kinship.
I mean, Gordon said it best, I think, at least succinctly. He said, you know, Marigali calls a shot and then he goes out and kills people. And Gordon respects that. He loves a person that's confident but can back it up. And I think everyone likes that. It's when people are cocky and can't back it up where, you know,
you have some
feelings
problems.
Are hurt and not everyone responds the same way.
But let me ask you guys this. Which match would you like to see more? Marigali versus Buchecha or Marigali versus Keenan?
Three-way, just to put them all three on the mat at the same time and see.
Last man standing.
Man, that's a tough question. I don't have a preference. Give me either.
You want to see both.
Give me
I want to see both. Yeah. I mean, I want to see that Buchecha match. You know, we saw that a year ago or a year and a half ago now almost at World Championships. And it was 5-2 for Buchecha. He scored, you know, it was a sweep each and then he scored a pass as well. And I'd love to see that happen again for sure. But the Keenan match was like, it was such a wild match. That one worm guard sweep that earned Keenan the 2 points was the decisive factor. But Marigali had like 10 advantages, was just going after him with submission after submission.
But you're also forgetting the in the Buchecha Marigali match where Buchecha had like the neon neck.
I didn't forget that. And then
Buchecha was like pointing at Leandro like in the corner.
He was
talking to Leandro while the match was still going on. You know,
that's like a signature move. Buchecha addressing the crowd like mid match.
When he says that I do my talking on the mats. He literally means it.
Yeah, yeah. Because Buchecha doesn't like saying anything on camera. Right? We've interviewed him countless
certainly
times.
A lot different than you know Gordon per se.
Yeah, but, I mean, Buchecha is quite the opposite. He says it over and over and over. He's like, I don't like to talk in interviews. I don't like to talk shit. I don't like to say anything. It's like, I just want to let my jiu-jitsu do the talking. And when he does, wow, he says a lot, right?
Yeah, definitely. I'll answer your question, though. I think I'm a little bit more interested in the Keenan rematch.
Intrigued to see what would happen again.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah, just because that one was so technical and it was like, I feel like it was like five matches in one match, you know, just because there were so many things that happened, I feel like. And it was like the way Keenan broke it down and everything, you really got to see exactly what happened at every moment of the match. So I'd really love to see how that one runs back again.
Well, we may see that happen again soon. We're not sure, to be honest, because, you know, we're still waiting for the rest of the names to be announced. But this leads nicely into a little discussion about an upcoming event that we have on Flow Grappling, November 23rd in Seoul, in South Korea. Chase, you're going to be taking that long, long flight over to South Korea, and you're going to be going to the Spider BJJ Championship Final, right?
That's right. It's my second time, my third time in Korea, second time at a Spider event. And if you guys haven't watched any of these, they are absolutely phenomenal. It's some of the best production I've ever seen. A lot of money on the line this time. There's $100,000 per division. There are two divisions. We got 100 kilos and below.
I think that is the biggest payday that we've ever heard of in jiu-jitsu. It's $250,000 prize fund for only two black belt divisions. They've got an 8-man lightweight under 76 and a heavyweight under 100 kilos. And in total, they're giving away $250,000.
Pretty nice, right?
Let's do it.
Very nice.
The cast hasn't been fully revealed yet, but we have guys like Marigali, Keenan, Rodolfo have all been sort of hinted at.
All right, let's bring it up. Let's see. Who are the names? Who have we got? We got them right here. So for the under 76, we've got Mateus Gabriel, Edwin Najmi, Levi Jones-Leary, Jameel Hill, Jonathan Alves, and Mateus Lutz.
Man, what a
fresh... That's a hell of a lineup.
Yeah, what just like a fresh lineup of new, exciting, young, the guys who are like mixing it up, Levi, Edwin, Mateus Gabriel, of course, world champion, Jamil, of course, world champion. So I love that list. It's not even everybody there, but already that it's like gets me pumped.
That is huge. Yeah, you're right. You've got two IBJJF world champions. Levi, of course, European and Pan champion this year as well. Jonathan Alves is kind of a new black belt, right? But he's already been making waves.
Brown belt world champion. Levi's a brown belt world
champion. Also a spider champ.
He is spider champ last year. And as a brown belt at spider, he beat both Paolo Miao and Jameel Hill. So he has some pretty big wins. Mateus Lutz, the only colored belt in that division right now. That's a good thing about Spider. They mix it up, right? Even in the qualifiers, they even have purple belts. The purple, brown, and black together. But Mateus has a brown belt fighting through. And Edwin Najmi. I mean, we always love watching Edwin go, right? Mm-hmm. It's so exciting. And then check this out. This is the heavyweight lineup so far. Bear in mind, this is only we only got six guys in each division right now, because Spider actually they're in the process of rolling out the names. They're rolling out these guys every day. They're announcing another four names: two guys in the lightweight, two guys in the heavyweight. So we'll find out a couple more names soon. But in the under 100 kilogram division, we've got Kynan Duarte, Leandro Lowe, Anderson Muniz, Tim Spriggs, Claudio Calasanz. And the news dropped today, the return, the man himself, Rodolfo Vieira.
Sick.
Woo! Goosebumps.
Super sick. Love the Rodolfo. You know, he's
In the gi.
He's got his MMA career that's doing really well. Just had a win in the UFC, but love that he's coming back and doing some more grappling matches and things like that. You know, 100K can bring out the best in a lot of us. So,
all right, you guys want to know something crazy about Rodolfo? So,
sure.
After he won ADCC in 2015, he basically retired from grappling, semi-retired. He took a hiatus to focus on his MMA career. He actually had to take care of a back surgery and then went into MMA, where he's 6-0 and signed with the UFC. It's going pretty well for him, right? The last time we saw him compete in the gi was he came back last year, 2018, to compete in an invitational event called the Black Belt CBD. And he beat Muhammad Ali, who was the world champion that year. And he also beat Kit Dale. So that was the first time that he put on the gi since 2014.
Wow.
So this is only the second time we've seen Rodolfo in the gi in 5 years. And he's coming back to go up against Leandro Lowe, Spriggs, Calasanz, and the 2019 IBJJF world champion, the 2019 ADCC champion. You name it. He's a guy champion everything. World Pro, European, Pan, etc., etc., etc. Kynan Duarte.
Kynan's so sick. Good. Kynan versus Rodolfo is like a dream match of the
Let's
year.
Let's run it. Let's run Kynan versus Rodolfo. Let's do it.
It's literally, it's a fantasy match. That's the kind of thing that you like. You could take a guy from one generation and another and put them together. You'd think that match like that would almost never happen. It could happen November 23rd at Spider BJJ.
Cross our fingers, huh?
Just a month away. A month away from today, basically. So.
And let's not forget,
a couple more names still to be added there, too.
There are two more names to be added in that one, and two more names to be added in the under 76. And, you know, we've heard, let's say, some rumors about the names that could be added to this, and we have a rough idea, but they're still not confirmed. So we'll hold off on saying anything yet. But
I mean, we did transition from talking about Keenan Marigali into this, but we don't know for sure if they're going to.
We don't know for sure.
Chase already said Keenan and Marigali.
I'm not going to say anything for sure.
That's how we started, but you know,
potentially
keep moving.
These divisions could get even spicier. They could get even better. But let's talk about another significant match in this under 100 kilogram division as well, because I want to see this badly. I want to see the rematch here. Kynan versus Leandro. It was the final of the IBJJF heavyweight division, the world championships, and Kynan beat Leandro for the world title, the gold medal. And we're not accustomed to seeing Leandro lose. You know, he's definitely hasn't had the same level of performances this year and last that he's been accustomed to. Multiple time world champion. For Kynan to come in and to take that title, very, very big moment. Do you think that Leandro could come back and reassert himself as a number one?
Man, I would say that's not the dominant storyline going into the event, but as a longtime fan of Leandro, one of the first guys I got to know when I started training, that would be the craziest and kind of epic storyline if he came back and beat Rodolfo, beat Kynan, won 100 grand, and was like, I still got it, bitches.
Yeah, I love, Leandro's always fun to watch, and definitely I think beating Leandro still still means a lot. So I definitely would love to see Kine and him run it back. That was the first time they had ever fought. It's always a little different, right? Mm-hmm. When they come back for the rematch, I think Leandro will be more prepared for exactly what Kynan brings to the table. But hard to pick against Kynan. Man, he's so good.
Yeah, he is. I mean, we figured that ADCC would be the toughest test of his career, and he showed that, you know.
With flying colors,
he
man.
Really, he did. He passed it with flying colors, you're right. Yeah. And then came back a week later to face Nick Rodriguez, the guy
just
that he faced
in
the final.
Just in case, that, yeah. You know, he wasn't the real deal.
If you had any doubts whatsoever, it took him like 2 minutes and 15 seconds to silence it with a submission win over Nick Rodriguez. I believe that's the first guy to ever tap Nick Rodriguez out.
I think he's the first guy to tap him, yeah.
That's incredible.
18 months into his jiu-jitsu career.
Because I feel bad for Kynan, because he put in all that work this year. He won Euros, Pans, World Pro, Worlds, Marianas Open, ADCC, bunch of super fights, putting in nonstop work. The guy is a workhorse. He competes so much. He won multiple Grand Slams. He competed in King of Mats. He did so much.
Yeah, he had the small little slip up in Brasileiros, but like that was basically he just competed every tournament out there.
He went from competing in Abu Dhabi, won the world champ with a world pro there, and then 5 days later was in Brazil to compete at the Brazilian Nationals, which is one of the toughest tournaments in the world, and he got submitted by Marigali. But that was like on a, I mean, what kind
another
of turnaround
one I
is
see
that,
again,
right?
Too. Marigali versus Kynan.
But Kynan, I feel like even all that, it's almost like the loss to Lachlan overshadowed his accomplishment in winning ADCC, right? Because he won ADCC, and then the first round match in the absolute division, he gets taken out by a guy that lost first round in the 77-kilogram division.
I disagree. I don't think it took anything away from Kynan, but it certainly elevated Lachlan. Like, that's how I'm thinking about it. Lachlan,
well, no doubt.
But, I mean, Kynan's story didn't change for me at all. Like he won ADCC, he beat Bushesha, you know, looked great against Nicky Rod and so on. You know, Lachlan has a separate story of taking out these monsters, and I don't know. It didn't detract anything from Kynan for me.
I think Kynan still walks away a legend from that tournament, especially winning the over 99, taking out Bushesha. Like he's got a lot of accomplishments there. That I think
he had to be the smallest guy in that division.
Yeah,
one off.
I mean, he didn't look too small, but...
compared to Orlando, though, and Nicky Rod and those guys, yeah.
I don't know, he still looked pretty beefy. But, Kynan Leandro rematch would be insane. I'd love to see Kynan go up against somebody like Rodolfo Vieira in the Gi. I think that would be a freaking animal match. That would just be two just intense physical grapplers going at it. I think that's a mouth-watering match right there.
Tim Spriggs, never in a boring match. So he's up there.
And also a Spider winner. He won the qualifier
did,
earlier
yeah,
this year.
Let's not sleep on that.
Beating
he beat Calasanz in the final.
And Mateus
right?
Denise and Hudson Mateus. It was probably a performance of a lifetime for Tim Spriggs in some ways, because all those guys are huge names in the sport, and Tim came through and kind of looked phenomenal. So.
And Anderson Muniz is the only brown belt in this division. We mentioned about how Mateus Lutz is the brown belt in the lightweight division. Anderson Muniz is the only colored belt in this under 100-kilogram division. Something of a wild card, shall we say, right?
Man, Anderson is going to be a problem for a lot of these guys, I think. You know, we've watched him at Purple Belt, Brown Belt now, and I think he could really spell a lot of trouble for any one of those guys, to be honest. I mean, obviously, he's still a brown belt. He's still on the come up, you know, but man, I think a couple years, too, once he graduates to black belt, he's going to give a lot of guys problems.
I mean,
he
won Worlds this year at brown belt. I think took double gold.
No, his brother took double gold. Eric Muniz took double gold.
There we go. Those Munizes, they keep
tricking
me.
They're easy to confuse, yeah.
But he did also do extremely well in Spider. Anderson holds a bronze medal match over Mateus Denise, and then he beat Roberto Jimenez earlier in that same tournament.
Yeah, he lost to Kynan in that tournament by, like, if I remember correctly, he was maybe even winning on advantages, and Kynan hit this sick throw like last like 10 seconds or something of the match, like this huge kind of almost like a Tayatoshi style, but with the underhook. It was like a beautiful hip throw, and he's stepping across the legs and just sent Anderson flying. So that's another rematch I'd like to see right there. Anderson, for people who haven't seen him compete, Anderson's what, 6'4", maybe 6'5"?
He's huge. Yeah, absolutely.
He's definitely a big guy.
He's really, really tall, very, very lanky. And he loves the lasso hook, as you can imagine. And he puts that lasso in, and guys are just stuck.
And they're like, good at that worm guard stuff, that lapel guard stuff, too.
They mess around with that, right?
Yeah.
Him and his brother Eric are for those who don't know. And there's actually three of them. There's Alex Muniz as well. Alex is a middleweight. I believe Eric usually does heavyweight, and Anson does super heavyweight, although they kind of can change division sometimes. But yeah, they say that Eric is actually, well, he's definitely, if you look at the results as well, he's the more consistent. He won double gold at Europeans this year, double gold at Pans this year, double gold at Brazilian Nationals this year, and double gold at Worlds this year. I believe he's so the
he's
only brown belt at Grand Slam.
Pretty good, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, he's all right.
Yeah, Eric Muniz is one. These Muniz brothers, they're both training at Alliance's Dream Art Project in Sao Paulo now as well. And
producing a lot of sick killers out of there for sure.
Well, keep an eye on Flow Grappling to see the further announcements, because we've got two more guys to come in the 100 kilogram and two more guys to come in the under 76. And I'm sure that it'll only add to the interest of that right there. Guys, there's one other big thing that happened this week that we have to talk about, and that is last night we had the live premiere, world first, of the Mikey Musumeci documentary. Reed, kick us off. What was that
Absolutely.
About?
Guys, first of all, thank you guys for tuning in, watching, making this our most successful New Guard ever. You know, Mikey Musumeci went out there and premiered it last night. Been getting a lot of great feedback, so I just wanted to give a shout out to everybody who watched it, who took the time to check it out. Thank you guys for watching. Really, really appreciate that. Definitely let us know what you thought about it. But, you know, man, I don't know. I've kind of said a lot about this Mikey movie. I'm very excited to see it go out and have a life of its own outside, you know, outside these dark rooms that I've been watching it in for a while. And just excited to see it. I feel like people are digging it. People are into it. And, you know, talked to Mikey today. He was really excited about how it came out and everything like that. So,
I'm glad, because I got to say, such an interesting and unique story. You know, the only American to become a three-time IBJJF Black
Belt
World
man.
Champion.
I told Mikey, you know, man, it's like, it's incredible to be a fly on the wall, you know, to be kind of, you know, just off to the side holding the camera for some of these just life-changing moments.
Well, you were there for every one of those. Mm-hmm. Every one of those Black Belt World Championships that he won, you were right there over Matt's side, right?
Yeah. After each one, I ran over and got a quick little interview, at least after every one of his World Championship wins. I told him, you know, just witnessing the things that Mikey's been able to accomplish and just his perspective, the type of personality that he has. He's a guy that he's impossible not to root for. He has such a great attitude on jiu-jitsu, a real positive attitude, it was special, a really special thing. Always, definitely the end of the documentary gets me always a little emotional, but seeing the way you know, him and Tammy interact with each other and this kind of like fulfillment of a lifelong dream these guys have been working towards standing on the podium together, you know,
they did it
since they were 4 or 5 years old, you know, and to see them kind of realize this dream and to capture them realizing this dream, it was
first time
incredible.
We ever saw a black belt brother and sister win the world championship in the same year.
Yeah.
Right, that is phenomenal,
and it couldn't have happened to two better people, two harder workers, you know, two people who represent the sport of jiu-jitsu, you know, as well as anybody else. You know, these two Tammy and Mikey are two of the best people I think we've met in this sport. So
yeah, they've been super welcoming throughout all of our content and stuff. We've been working with them for years. I had one criticism of the film though as I was
Let's
watching
it.
It.
Go
so,
on.
So Tammy says at one point in her interview, you know, Mikey, you know, you look at him, he wasn't gonna be that great. People are like, he's not gonna do much. And then we roll clips of Mikey just killing kids over and over. I'm like, who's saying Mikey's not gonna be great? He looks amazing. He's like 7 years old.
When he's a kid, 7 years old, he looks like a little Hercules, doesn't
yeah, exactly.
he?
Like, yeah. Who's looks, saying this kid's not gonna be great?
Yeah, he looked like a beast back in the day. Yeah,
that was awesome. I've been waiting 6 months to hear Mikey tell me that speech about the disembodied experience. Out of body experience at Worlds, because Reed told me about this. You know, Reed came back from the shoot of March, and he's like, "Man, this interview with Mikey was insane, and we got all this great stuff." And he had this moment where he talks about leaving his body and watching the match from the stands, and I wanted to hear it. I wanted to hear Mikey tell that story, and
it was so cool, right? About how he's like blacked out in the middle of his match, and he just kind of comes back around, and he's like, he's got the guy's back, and he's like, oh, look at that! And he's like watching himself from the stands.
That'd be a
amazing.
Hard way to do jiu-jitsu. That'd be really confusing.
I gotta say though, I really enjoyed that part of the documentary. I mean, I enjoyed the whole thing, but I enjoyed that part of the documentary a lot, where he's talking about the kind of the interplay between the conscious and the subconscious mind in jiu-jitsu, because I think that's one thing that a lot of people maybe overlook in jiu-jitsu, is that it's an extremely physical art, of course. You know, it's grappling. You gotta grab and pull and push and twist and so on. And it's you know, it's physically very demanding. And we know that jiu-jitsu is a very cerebral activity. And it's called physical chess for a reason. But there is an inner game to jiu-jitsu, right? And I think that the top guys in the sport, a lot of them have this edge because they're able to do something internally, something, you know, in their own minds that sets them apart from the competition. And it's not just going out there and being stronger. It's not just being faster. It's not just having a better strategy for the techniques that are in front of you. But it's about putting yourself in or going to a place mentally where you're able to operate at the highest level. And I think what Mikey's description of that moment there is kind of what people talk about. It's like the flow state, right? About unconsciously performing to the highest level. It's like you hear about this in other activities. You hear it about, for example, the surfer catching the wave, about how it's that mindless moment of just being completely in control of your body, but almost watching it from the outside. Everything's just happens naturally and you just ride the wave off. Or the musician who, you know, after years and years of deliberate practice, sits down and they play this incredibly complicated, complex piece of music perfectly without hitting a single bad note. But they're not actually thinking about doing it while they do it. It just flows from within. And it's almost like what Mikey was talking about in his World Championship performance. It's almost like that he was able to put himself in this optimal state of performance where the jiu-jitsu just came out and it won him those matches. And then when he wins, that's when, boom, back down to earth, and that he runs over to Kyle and he's like, I did it.
No, I think watching that part, you know, over and over and over again, it really makes a lot of, at first I was just like so enamored with like the with just how big he was talking, you know, and just these crazy things that I was like, whoa, this is intense. But listening to him talk about it over and over again, you know, as I watched the clips and stuff, it really just made a lot more sense to me. Really, it really started to make like perfect sense, actually, you know, and especially because, you know, competition can be a really super intense, stressful, you know, thing. You know, your heart's beating fast. Especially a world championship final. You know, the stress, the anxiety.
I can't even imagine
the intensity of the moment. You know, it, a lot of times competing, even just on small local tournaments, it has this kind of surreal feeling to it. Sometimes, you know, where you have this kind of hyper focus and the adrenaline's kicking and everything.
It's such a weird come down for the amateur to when they're done competing. Like for myself, like when I leave a tournament, I feel like I've left like a concert, something like a rave. I don't know. It's like the weirdest feeling. You don't really feel like you're all there.
Yeah. You're like exactly. Exhilarated and a little bit spaced. And yeah.
And what you're talking about, you know, that maybe a lot of these guys have an edge. And I think that, you know, I think it's collectively everybody feels that. And you have to try to deal with it. You have to try to find a way to deal with the things that your mind is doing. And, you know, the self-doubt or whatever you have running through your head. You know, you have to deal with those emotions or those negative things or whatever. You have to deal with the moment in some way. And hearing Mikey, you know, be like, no, I literally shut off my mind, you know, and I took it very literally at first, but just, I don't know, hearing him talk about it over and over, it made a lot more sense to me as we went on.
I learned a lot from that documentary, I have to say, and one of the biggest things I also took away from it was how hard it hit him. You know, when he won his first world championships and he was booed by the crowd. And that was a really heartbreaking moment because, you know, for anybody to be in that position and to get booed by the crowd is, it's got to suck, right? As simple as that, you know, it must be a really, you know, tough moment to deal with. But I don't think I appreciated how much it affected Mikey, you know, at the time and not just in the moment, but for months and months afterwards. And I mean, what do you think, Reed? Because he said there that he was literally close to quitting jiu-jitsu. Do you think that's right?
Yeah, I think this is a really pivotal moment in the film and in Mikey's career. You know, I mean, obviously, this is you're winning the world championships, black belt world championships. He's worked his entire life for it. It's supposed to be the happiest moment of his life. And you know, the rug kind of gets pulled out from underneath him. And I think it has a lot to do with you know, accomplishing your goals and then kind of being like, oh, wait, you know, now what's next? You know, or accomplishing your goals and maybe them not being as fulfilling as you thought they would once you reached those goals. You know, I think that happens to a lot of athletes, happens to a lot of people where they you know, finally achieve the greatness, or they achieve the thing they've been working their entire life for, and it's not quite as fulfilling as maybe they expected it to be or they wanted it to be. So maybe it's a little bit of that, but I definitely, you know.
Well, to have such a negative association with what should be
exactly.
such a special memory as
exactly.
well, it could leave a really bad taste in your mouth, because Mikey has dedicated almost his entire life to this. He's been training since he was like 4 years of age, and to, you know, become a black belt world champion at such a young age after winning every single other belt color along the way for his first black belt world title, for him to get booed by the crowd. And the reasons for him being booed are still kind of unclear, right? Still not really sure why. You know, was it because he was repping AOJ? Was it because he beat Meow? So who knows is the answer. But yeah, I'm just glad that he was able to.
The worlds can be a raucous crowd sometimes.
They get pretty rowdy.
Yeah,
it can be
a
rowdy crowd. Yeah.
You know, I don't think, you know, obviously it affected Mikey quite a bit, and I think he just needed to find that passion again, and luckily for all of us, he was able to rekindle and you know, go on and win two more world titles. He's only 23 years old, people.
Well, that's the best way to wash the bad taste out of your mouth. Go back and win it, not just once, but twice more.
Be in prime position to do it for the next 10 years or more. I mean,
exactly.
He's so young.
I mean, if he wants to, right? I kind of, at this point in time, I struggle to see anybody coming in and offering a real tough challenge to Mikey. I mean, there are a few guys coming through the divisions. You know, you've got a couple of standout guys. Talisson Suarez is one. You know, he's just got his black belt this year after being one of the most dominant color belts we've ever seen, and he's going to be a really nice addition to the black belt roosterweight rankings, or roosterweight division next year, I should say. Jonas Andrade, who's also from Cicero Costa / Unity, competes a lot as a light feather, but he also cuts down to rooster as well for the big tournaments. He could be another guy. So there are a few of them I feel that could go in there and offer Mikey something, and these are also very, very young athletes as well. But we'll see, right?
Yeah, that's the best part about this. I keep saying that this is sort of chapter one. Of Mikey's career here, you know. Yeah, in 10 years we'll see, you know, how many world titles he's racked up and what the rest of Mikey's story unfolds, because we definitely know it's going to continue, and I think, you know, there's going to be a lot of great moments to come that we can capture as well. So who knows, maybe we'll see chapter two pretty soon.
I hope so. I really do.
Yeah.
Well, guys, I think it's a fine time to call it right there, but thanks for joining us once again. It's been a really cool episode today. I gotta say, man, I'm so excited. Spider BJJ's coming up. We got a bunch of Fight to Wins coming up. We got Fight to Win this weekend with Talita Ankar versus Catherine Perret in the main event. We've also got Izaki Bayens versus Dante Leon. That's a crazy match. I'm super excited for. Herbert Santos is back on Fight to Win in a couple of weeks in November 2nd in Denver, I believe. We've got the Long Beach Open on November 3rd. We've got Spider BJJ on November 23rd. We've got Third Coast Grappling in December. We've got Nogi World Championships. We just got event after event after event after event over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, we all these great events, but also on Flow Grappling, we got some killer content. Never have we had this much great content coming out on Flow Grappling, these great videos like Mikey Musumeci. We got a bunch more planned in the works, so definitely don't sleep on this content we got coming out either. It's going to be some sick stuff.
It's never been a better time
yep.
to be a Flow Grappling subscriber.
Yep, that's right.
Awesome, guys. Well, thanks very much for joining us once again, and we'll see you next time.